We get things rolling, though, this afternoon by welcoming into the program an author, a contributing editor to New York Magazine, the author of a wonderful new book entitled Sticky Fingers, The Life and Times of Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone Magazine. Joe Hagan, thanks for being with us this afternoon.
Well, thanks for having me on. Sounds like you guys haven't quite got the storm yet, huh?
We're waiting on it. It should arrive late tonight, and then be with us for a little while. And well, you know all about this kind of thing because I understand you're a Black Bear, a University of Maine graduate.
That's right. I know Bangor pretty well. I used to lived in Orono, of course, an old town when I was an off-campus student. And, of course, I love that area, and I love you, Maine.
Well, I absolutely loved your book. It was such a fantastic read and a fascinating story. And the story of how the book came to be is pretty fascinating, too, that you were hand-selected by Jan Wenner to tell the story.
That's right. I guess 2013 it was. He asked me if I was interested in writing his biography. And I'd gotten to know him a little bit casually and wrote a couple stories for Rolling Stone and his other magazines. And so I was, of course, flattered by the idea, and the main thing was I wanted it to be an independent book and not a sort of authorized in the usual sense. It would be a book that would have some integrity, and we eventually figured out a way to do that, and that's the book I ended up writing.
Well, and I would say mission accomplished, and we'll look no further than the subject, who has called it deeply flawed and tawdry. I think other people would just say honest is more likely.
Yeah, well, you know, on some level, that maybe was predictable, all things considered. But and it's hard to for a living person to read a large biography of themselves and come out happy because life is messy and sometimes our memories don't comport with the reality. So, but I think the book is a real kind of cultural history that shows his legacy as a guy who helped shape the history of rock and roll and the history of American politics and Hollywood and all kinds of things as the editor of Rolling Stone magazine.
When it began in the 60s, there was nothing like Rolling Stone. Was the timing right for Wenner to start this?
Oh, man, yeah. He was definitely in the right place at the right time. It was this, the fall of 1967. He was living in San Francisco, California, where you had the, this hippie renaissance happening, and the Haight-Ashbury area was going crazy, and then they had the Monterey International Pop Festival, and all these bands had come to town. And so there was something in the air, obviously, magic in the air, and he really captured it. He didn't just make an underground newspaper that was for hippies. He made a real, newspaper of integrity that, people who read regular newspapers could recognize as a professional product. And that was a kind of a revelation for the counterculture at the time.
And there was rock criticism, but it was pretty rare. And the people that he gathered from folks like Ralph J. Gleason, Lester Bangs, Dave Marsh, it was a whole new way of looking at what before a lot of people had viewed as simply a trifle.
Well, that's right. And, to this point, the main magazines covering popular music for kids, for teenagers, were, Teen Beat and Tiger Beat, and they were not really taking the music or taking the musicians as seriously as some of the musicians wanted to be taken. And the music itself was changing, too. The Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the Beatles album, had just come out, and there was a new kind of sense of rock was art. This was something that needed to be written about in the same way people wrote about jazz. And so that was, going on about a year before Rolling Stone started. You were seeing this. And Jan Wenner, founder of Rolling Stone, really, he wanted that to be a kind of pillar of what he did, which was take the music seriously and also understand that the culture around this music was as important as music itself. You had, political revolutionaries, you had, poetry and all the, new kinds of movies being made for, young people with a whole new point of view. And it had to do with, obviously, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll, right? So,
you talk about the fact, too, the real turning point in the history of the magazine was the coverage that they gave to what happened at the concert at Altamont, even though it was likely to tick off some friends of the magazine.
Well, that's right, yeah. So, one of the kind of wonderful discoveries that I made was that as soon as Rolling Stone magazine launched, the band, the Rolling Stones, a lawyer working for that band sent Jan Wenner a cease and desist order because they said, hey, you're exploiting what they thought of as their name. and trademark for a commercial enterprise. And so this became something of some tension between Jan Wenner and Mick Jagger, which they eventually resolved by starting a joint venture Rolling Stone that would be published in Britain. And it was called, you know, British Rolling Stone, and Mick Jagger was in control of it, kind of strangely enough. But it was a total disaster, this British version of the magazine, and their joint venture broke apart. And it didn't just broke apart at any time, it broke apart right on the eve of this very famous free concert in San Francisco at Altamont Speedway, this race car track, where they were going to have a huge open concert, and the Rolling Stones were going to be the headliners. As many people might be aware, it was a total disaster. There were deaths, there was a murder, it was just a complete, you know, flip side of Woodstock. And this put Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone in this incredible position where they suddenly, oh, we have to write a giant expose about my former business partner. And this is one of the sort of Shakespearean stories in the book that takes you into the sort of how small and personal and interesting all of this really was.
Yeah, we're talking with Joe Hagan, the author of Sticky Fingers. If that was one of the journalistic high points that established the credibility of the magazine, the low point, likely the coverage and the reaction to the University of Virginia rape story.
That's right. Yeah, it was sort of a sad coda for Jan Wenner's run at the magazine. You know, he was on the, it was like a year before he was going to have his 50-year anniversary of Rolling Stone magazine, and it really hurt the credibility of the magazine, and some say, you know, maybe permanently. You know, the magazine was already having financial troubles, so it was one of the last things they had was their credibility. And that story, boy, it was a bad one. And they didn't really fact check properly. They got the story wrong, and they were sued, you know, left, right, and center by different people involved, and that cost them a lot of money and a lot of face. You know, now the magazine's moving into a new time. You know, it's been recently sold to a new owner.
So. Right. Wenner certainly had an eye for talent. How important were people like Hunter S. Thompson, Tom Wolfe, Annie Leibovitz to the success of the magazine?
Oh, well, hugely so. And you know, I would say, and I argue in the book, that Hunter S. Thompson, in particular, sort of helped define what Rolling Stone would become in the 1970s. And the 1970s is sort of the key period for the ascendance of Rolling Stone magazine. And what it established was that this wasn't just rock and roll. This was the whole baby boomer generation had a new voice of its own, that it was separating itself from the previous generations. And one of those ways was to adopt a new kind of journalism, a subjective kind of journalism that Hunter Thompson and Tom Wolfe, symbolized manifested. So in rock and roll, journalism, Jan Wenner was famous for saying back then, was the new rock and roll. And it was definitely kind of a big period of great journalism, you know, up to even Woodward and Bernstein at the Washington Post. There was a new glamour to being a journalist, and Hunter Thompson for Rolling Stone was that.
Jan Wenner certainly embraced the rock and roll lifestyle, and you document that in the book. Was that lifestyle and was the embrace of celebrity culture detrimental to his image or that of the magazine in the long run?
Well, you know, what Jan Wenner did with Rolling Stone was Jan Wenner himself was a social climber, kind of in the most classic sense. He wanted to use the magazine to get further his own place in the world. He wanted to be around celebrities. He wanted to be around rich people and powerful people. He took the magazine to Washington. He took it to Hollywood, eventually to New York City. And he wanted a seat at the big table. And all during this period, his generation was taking over. You know, they had started out as like a bunch of 18-year-olds in San Francisco. Well, flash forward 10 years, they're in their, late 20s and 30s, and they're becoming powerful and influential. And as the magazine grew and became more lucrative, you know, it became more about celebrities and Jan Wenner's pursuit of celebrities for his cover and to sell his magazine. And, you know, that is part of the evolution of all of our American culture as we watched it go from something that was more idealistic in the 60s to something that was about selling something, you know, something that was about fame itself as a quality, right, that detached from actual, you know, things like music or even art. And I sort of trace that all the way to now where we have Donald Trump, who was kind of broke down the door of the White House by being famous, ultimately.
I've been a subscriber to Rolling Stone for a long time. Certainly it doesn't have the influence that it had in the past. And with the change in ownership, but who knows what lies ahead. Is Rolling Stone still important in the world of music criticism, the arts, pop culture?
Well, I would say not. I mean, in many ways, the 50-year anniversary marked a kind of ending because Jan Wenner sold it. And in so many ways, Rolling Stone up until then and through the years had been an expression of his worldview. The Rolling Stone that people grew up with, that was Jan Wenner's magazine. It was in the same way that Playboy was sort of about the worldview and the vision of life of Hugh Hefner. Well, Rolling Stone was that for Jan Wenner. And when he sells the magazine, and by the way, the rock and roll age is mainly over. I mean, the boomers are older. Rock and roll is no longer the center of the culture, and nor are the boomers. And so the new generations are coming along, and they have their own outlets for that. And it's not a magazine. You know, print magazine, it's even print magazines have gone down. But that doesn't negate the incredible impression that Rolling Stone made on the culture. And the 50-year history is just remarkable, and it's a history of our times, you know, and how we got here. And as I say in the book, how did we get from John Lennon on the cover of Rolling Stone in 1967 to Donald Trump today in this moment that we're in?
Well, it is a wonderful read. I can't recommend it highly enough. Sticky Fingers, The Life and Times of Jan Wenner and Rolling Stone Magazine. Joe Hagan, great to talk with you this afternoon. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.